We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming to the program, a gentleman who's had quite a career. He became the youngest big city mayor in America when he was elected mayor of Cleveland, Ohio. He went on to serve several terms in the United States Congress, ran twice for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. He's the author of The Courage to Survive and a terrific new book entitled The Division of Light and Power. We are happy to be joined by Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
Rich, first of all, thank you for the chance to be on Downtown. And you're in the middle of what is one of my most favorite places in all the world, Maine. And I used to come up there all the time to visit my Uncle Frank and Aunt Mary and Norris in Bangor. So, you know, this is it's just such a delight to be on the show with you.
Thank you. Well, it's wonderful to have you with us. Now, I have to say, when I got the copy of the book, I thought, well, this is a large book. If it's going to be a large book on public policy. Now, I was a political science major, so maybe I'll enjoy it. But I have to tell you, it read like a thriller. This was a tremendous book. I couldn't put it down. And the most frightening part is realizing that it's all true.
Yeah. Well, you know, it begins when I was elected to Cleveland City Council. I was 23 years old, elected to a big city council. Most of the people who became my colleagues were old enough to be my grandparents. And suddenly I was, a whole new world opened up to me in terms of the transactional basis of politics, the idea that, you know, you vote right, it'll be good for you personally. And then I discovered, as the book relates, the games that were going on behind the scene to try to steal Cleveland's municipal electric system, the corporate espionage, the sabotage, and as the story goes.
Well, can you, for anybody who hasn't read the book yet but will want to, can you explain briefly that relationship that existed between Municipal Light and CEI?
Yes. Well, Cleveland had its own power company since the turn of the century, the 20th century. And a visionary mayor by the name of Tom Johnson came up with this idea, said we ought to provide power to people for cheaper than a private utility would charge it. When he was involved in the formation of it, that private utility tried to block him. But then the years go on and decades move forward, and the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, that private utility monopoly, began a secret plan that they executed to take over Muni Light. And that plan involved, actual interference with repairs that needed to be made on the system, political interference, even blackouts. They created blackouts on the municipal system. I mean, it's a wild series of events that led to the city of Cleveland inexplicably trying to sell the very system that this private company was undercutting and sell it at a discount. So I came in the middle of that and I said, wait a minute, what's going on here? And, you know, I'm from Ohio, but I got a little bit of that Yankee, like, what the heck is this about? And so by asking questions that way, I stepped into what a battle in Cleveland we had over this municipal electric system.
Well, and as you mentioned, you were very young when you stepped in. You beat a longtime city councilman, and you did it, well, the old-fashioned way, by going door to door, and that was very effective. But right away, you were told to mind your place and simply stay in the back and keep quiet.
Absolutely, and of course, that didn't really necessarily connect with me at all. So I found out how the utility was lobbying to block repairs to our municipal system, how they were gaining support in the media with their advertising dollars. And then the city decided it's going to sell this system at a fraction of its value. So I start this campaign. And the minute I started the campaign, high-powered rifle shots taken, and this is my head by a fraction. And, you know, later on, the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Organized Crime determined that there was an organized crime plot to assassinate me, and that was connected directly, according to police intelligence, to my stand trying to save our municipal electric system.
And you mentioned the media, and that was a fascinating part of the story as well, that in the midst of doing some opinion pieces on this situation involving the power companies, suddenly the local TV station pulled the plug, ended up firing their reporter because ad revenue was in danger and they were looking at big buys from CEI to support their point of view.
Well, you're right. The top talk show host in Cleveland, Steve Clark, was fired because he did a show about the inequities and the high utility rates that the private power company was charging. And this power company made a play to buy more advertising from that station, and out goes Steve Clark. And throughout the book, there's stories about people in the media who stood up and lost their jobs because the people that ran those stations or the newspapers were much more concerned about the advertising revenue than they were about getting the real facts through to the public. So, you know, this is the story is unprecedented in American history about a concerted effort to undermine a city by a utility monopoly and by their banking partner later on. So, you know, I was a 31-year-old mayor. I was the youngest mayor elected in the United States at that time. And, you know, I was called upon to take a stand on behalf of the people and to keep my promise to save that system. And on December 15th, 1978, the biggest bank in the state told me, look, either you sell that system to the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, or we're not going to renew the city's debt on loans that I hadn't even taken out. They were taken out by my predecessor. I said, no, they put the city of Cleveland in default. Unprecedented event in American history. It was an attempt. It was extortion. There were, you know, it was a strong arm attempt. And, you know, I will tell you that, you know, I was a young mayor, but I showed that, look, just because you're young doesn't mean, you know, these corporations were going to roll over me, you know, just run over me. And I took a stand on behalf of the people. It was a tough time.
We're talking with Dennis Kucinich here on Downtown. In the book, you also talk about your childhood. It was difficult. You moved a lot. It was not the best of childhood growing up. How much do you think of your efforts in politics were an effort to have some power when you felt so powerless as a child, and to help those who were also feeling powerless because of the control that was in the hands of the few?
You know, Rich, you know, that is a very perceptive question. And I think I would put it, I would answer it this way, that I told myself that if I ever got anywhere in life that I could help people who were experiencing the kind of difficulty that my parents experienced when we were growing up, that I was going to take a stand for them, that I was going to represent their, you know, economic and social concerns. So what do you know? I got elected mayor at age 31, and I had to make a decision. Was I going to stand for the right of people to have a utility they could call their own, which provided power at rates that were 20% cheaper than the private power company? Or was I going to knuckle under, sell the electric system? The bank promised $50 million with a new loans credit if I sold. And if I didn't, they were going to put the city in default. And get this. The people voted to tax themselves in order to pay off the defaulted notes on these loans I hadn't taken out. The banks promised, the people did that, they'd take us out of default. The banks reneged on their promise, kept us in default until I left office. I mean, this is the kind of not just hardball, the kind of ruthless practices that you hear these stories about Central America, banana republics. Mm-hmm. They tried to turn a city into a kind of a banana republic.
Well, there are some characters in the book. Safe to say, not everyone had the purest of motives. And some of these guys are right out of every gangster movie you've ever seen. And I think especially of your interactions with a man named William Seawright.
Well, you know, I mean, he was a numbers kingpin. And he was a very suave individual, very sophisticated. And, you know, before lotteries came in, in many communities, there was an underground lottery. It was known as the numbers game. And people would buy a number based on, and they'd bet on the winning number being the last numbers of the advance declines and unchanged in the Dow Jones stock averages. And this was a big business. Millions of dollars every week people would bet, because for many people in the inner city, you hit the numbers, you got it made. I mean, you know, the, at the least, you could end up, you know, buying a, you know, having a place, paying your rent that month, paying your own bills. And at the most, you could, you know, make thousands of dollars. And so, yeah, Mr. Seawright ran the numbers. And he came to me, as I write in the book, when I was going to help somebody run for mayor, he came to me with a suitcase. He opens it up. Keep in mind, at that point, I'm about 24. He opens it up, and I'm looking at a suitcase full of money. Like, there had to be $20,000 at least in $10 and $20 bills packed into the suitcase. And it's for my use, right? I'm looking at him going, whoa, what did I get myself into here? Needless to say, I pushed the suitcase back with a little spiritual assist from Sister Leona, who was my sixth grade teacher, who always seemed to be hovering around when I had a moral decision to make.
Well, and then he would come back and try to ruin your campaign later on by showing up at a campaign rally and trying to spread vicious lies until your wife stood up to him.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually a very dramatic moment where he contrived a charge of sexual harassment against one of my employees. I mean, it's total setup. But he could have pulled it off, except, you know, my wife at the time intervened and just chased him off in a fury. It's an amazing scene. But yeah, I mean, Cleveland, you have to remember, in the 70s, Cleveland was the bombing capital of America.
Right.
You had many different types of competition going on between mobsters representing different communities, you know, the Black community, the Italian community, the Irish community. And they're playing for keeps. I mean, you know, if there was a tremendous competition for control of the rackets and vice, and Cleveland was the epicenter of that for a while. And that's when I began my run for mayor. And that's also when I experienced, an assassination attempt.
And all that largely because they didn't know what to do with a person whose vote they couldn't buy.
That's true. Yeah, that's what I was told. NBC TV later did just an incredible interview with a convicted hitman who they put behind a screen and, you know, put a shadow over his face. And he said he was asked why would they want to kill the mayor? And his answer was pretty blunt. He said, because we can't buy Kucinich. That's what I was told. We can't buy Kucinich. To me, it's like this. Look, if something's right, no one needs to pay anyone to get it done. But if it's wrong, it's wrong. And it was wrong for them to try to force me to sell an electric system which belonged to the people, which they conspired to try to take over. And by the way, Rich, everything that I've said here is backed up by records. And with respect to the activities of that utility monopoly, backed up by federal court records, where in the discovery process, we were able to retrieve tens of thousands of documents about the games that were played to try to undermine our municipal electric system. I mean, they ran a military type strategy to knock out our municipal electric system.
And eventually, CEI would largely admit to all of this, but it wasn't until 3 years after the city defaulted.
Right, right. They said, you know, yeah, we tried to take it over. And you know, look, I saw this right from the beginning. You know, I was able to see what was going on, and I said so. But, you know, it was only years later that people finally figured out that what I was telling them was right. And so I've included it all in this book, the story of a young person who gets involved in politics, who sees the corruption, who challenges it, takes a stand, gets elected mayor, the youngest mayor in the country, and then it becomes even more intense, where the corporations are learning that they can't force this young mayor to just do whatever they want. So years later, this story becomes important because, look, when the federal American Rescue money runs out, there'll be a new effort at privatizing municipal services all over the country.
Right.
And there'll be an effort to have people sell their water system, their sewer system, their light system at a cut rate, right? At a cut rate. And so this book is not just a cautionary tale, it's a handbook for activists. It's a means of equipping people to fight back, and fight back we did in Cleveland.
I think of what your advisor at Cleveland State said to you when you were interested in theater, but also pursuing politics. And he said, politics and theater, pretty much the same thing.
Well, he was right, except his partner said in theater, our lines are better. I will tell you that, I would have preferred to have a low profile, lower decibel kind of mayoralty at that time. Wasn't to be. I mean, I was either going to, when you tell entrenched power no, you can whisper it. But they hear the roaring in their ears. And so, I said no. And they fought back with everything, including threats to my life.
You've said repeatedly in your career that you find partisan labels confining. And here we are in 2021, perhaps as polarized as we've ever been with partisanship. Do you see a pathway out of this?
Well, I'll tell you, a pathway could be, the kind of sentiment that has existed in Maine off and on over the years. I've noticed this when I traveled the country. The Maine has something special. There's an independent streak. And it's not just a streak. It's the widest vein, I think, that exists in politics, where people aren't going to be led by their nose by a party. And, when I traveled the country as a presidential candidate, I discovered something in Maine that was different than every other state in the union. People the expectation is that government's going to be on the level. The expectation is that government isn't going to try to cheat you out of what belongs to you and your family. So, that's why talking to you today on downtown is a big thing for me, because, I've experienced a different kind of, you could call it Yankee rectitude of you don't cheat people, you don't steal. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but the expectations are there for a certain standard of conduct. Well, in Cleveland, it was a little bit different back then. And I think it's a little bit different across the country. I think that there's that partisan politics has become so poisonous. The divisiveness is bad for this country. And yes, I beat both political parties to get elected mayor. I beat a Democratic machine. I defeated the Republican leadership. And, when we went to City Hall, it was strictly on the basis of service to the people, not service to a political party.
As you say throughout the book, the question is not whether government can work. It's who the government works for. That was your struggle as mayor of Cleveland, making sure that it worked for the people. How do we do that as a nation?
First of all, you need an informed citizenry. People need to know Definitely. Exactly what's going on. And, it's up to every one of us to study local, state, federal government as it relates to our concerns and our needs. Otherwise, you're in a situation where you're always going to be taken advantage of. And so the first thing is to become informed. The second thing is there are times when you have to take action, when you can't sit back. You have to say something or you have to do something. I mean, that's what, I experienced in my life. I was somebody who came out of the neighborhoods of Cleveland. Nobody in my family was in politics. No one had any money. I came through into a system based on a desire to serve. And then I found out, whoa, this system isn't working for the people. It's working for a few interest groups. And so, until politics really delivers something of importance to people, in their own lives, people just say, who cares who the heck gets elected? But it does matter. It really matters.
The book is called The Division of Light and Power. It is a tremendous story, as I mentioned, a thrilling story to read, but also an inspiring one as well. And as somebody who teaches young people about government, I find it's the kind of book that will hopefully encourage young people to believe that they can make a difference in the system, regardless of their background. So Congressman Kucinich, thank you so much for your work through the years, and thank you for being with us today.
And thank you for a exceedingly intelligent discussion about this book. And if you end up recommending it to your class, give me a call. We'll do a Zoom call with the class.
That would be fantastic. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
All right, be well. Bye-bye now. That is Congressman Dennis Kucinich on Downtown. The book is The Division of Light and Power, and it is a terrific read.